Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. Bly Polar, blood, sweat, and data. By Premium Plus Sports, that's premiumplus-sports.com, the official travel agency of Babbittville. By the USA-swimrun.com. If you haven't tried a swim run event, grab a buddy and give one a try. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million in 2018. And check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Throughout the 80s and 90s and 2000s, if you were at any event, you had an opportunity to see a young man named Jeff Iron Montgomery, who was out there with Cytomax, who was out there with Muscle Milk and was racing, I think, 250-plus triathlons over the years. I think it might be the first time Iron has been on with us. Iron, how you doing?
Doing okay, Bob. It's been an interesting last, say, 6 months or so, but as we see here today, 3.5 weeks post-surgery,
yeah,
I got a tremendous second chance and gift, and it's just been overwhelming.
So let's go. You've had this rare version of cardiomyopathy for, what, 20 years?
More than 20. The short story is that 91 Kona.
Yeah.
I ended up having to DNF on the bike because I started throwing PVC so bad that it just kind of wigged me out. Didn't hurt. They weren't dangerous then because the condition was so benign.
Now, what was it, PV? What were you doing?
Yeah, PVC is extra beat.
Oh, you knew that you had your heart was, you could feel that you had extra beats happening.
Yeah. In fact, I was wearing in 91, I had a proto polar.
Right.
That I'd been using, and all of a sudden I'm going, I mean, I was in the middle of a good ride, and all of a sudden I'm going from 168, 170 to 220.
Oh, my God.
And then
to
170, 220. But the 220 wasn't real because they were just a couple extra beats. So this just went on for a few miles till I finally just pulled over and thought, something's not right. I don't want to make it any worse.
Yeah. Was it diagnosed at that point?
No, not at all. First time I'd ever experienced any of it was that day. So I got a ride back to town.
Yeah.
Flew home on Monday. Was at a cardiologist on Wednesday or Thursday. That guy referred me to somebody else because he couldn't see anything. And then another guy just, you know, he did a Holter test, which was, all he said was, there's something going on, but I can't put my finger on it.
Wow.
Well, that's still late October 91. And I didn't get it properly. It wasn't possible to get it properly diagnosed because it was so rare, and you only had a few cases of it way back then. To the point where it was probably 98 or 9 by the time it actually got diagnosed.
And when they do diagnose it, what can they do? Can they put a defibrillator in there or something along that line?
Well, first thing they do is they just put you on a battery of meds to control the crazy arrhythmias.
Yeah.
Because most people with heart failure, most of them, it's usually related to pumping ability and just an overall weakening. My pumping ability wasn't compromised. It was just these crazy arrhythmias started like around 98, 99. So it was just frustrating because you want to do more, you can't. You're on these meds, but you know the situation's going to get worse. You just don't know how fast.
Now, so you, what could you do? I'm sure you had to curtail what you're doing working out. What were you able to do, and when did it get to the point where you felt like you needed a heart transplant?
Well, in the best way to answer that would be from like 98, 99, 2000, I was just seeing a slight decline every year, not just to the extent that I was having to minimize whatever mild workouts I could do, but it just started affecting stamina at work where I could bust 18-hour days. And then all of a sudden, it just got to be kind of basic things just got way harder. Then in 02, things really dropped off. I had a bad year to where it became obvious that I had to do an ablation, which I'd already done one in 99.
Yeah.
It didn't fix anything. It was a wash. I wasn't any better. I wasn't any worse. But they kind of knew that going in. Well, it got so bad, the arrhythmias, that the drugs weren't controlling these VTAC, serious VTAC arrhythmias. So they did a much longer involved ablation and installed a defibrillator in NO2.
Okay.
So after that, it was just, you know, trying to make do on minimum duty, trying to have a productive, busy life without anybody really knowing anything. So that was the first real phase of knowing things were going to continue to decline. But we didn't know, you know, at what rate. Even then, that was 15 years ago.
Sure. And this is so rare. Now, do they feel that this is something you've had your entire life? Do they feel that it had something to do with endurance sports, or is it just, you know, your congenital type of thing?
All of these cardiomyopathies are different in that many of them are congenital. Mine, they determined, was not. So, you know, I've thought about it a million times as to what could have brought this on. Could it have been the fact that I had already had an enlarged heart,
mm-hmm.
and then was just nuking myself every day?
Right, in training,
and a lot of 50, 60-year-old athletes now are paying the piper for that with other various heart things. By there's enough data now that we know continuing to cook yourself in an unrecovered state comes with a price.
Oh, I mean, you look at Greg Welch, you know, Dave Scott's head ablation. We've had a lot of athletes who've had to deal with that.
Yeah.
So, but it got to the point, obviously, in the last 6 months or so where you had to do a heart transplant. And it's one thing to say, I need a heart transplant. It's another thing to get a heart transplant. How tough has this process been?
Real. It's been a stiff menu for sure.
Yeah.
It's just the arrhythmias. In 2014 and 15, I had three ablations, and two of them were 8 hours.
Oh my God.
One of them was 7 hours, and they couldn't really correct anything. And I remember the guy in 2015 saying, you know, in recovery 30 minutes later, you know, when they go in to do these ablations, they just go in and find these focal areas and they zap these little problem arrhythmias with radio frequency, and then they rev you up to see if you can go up and down smoothly. But they had gotten so many spots, but there were so many spots left that were the problem areas, that all of the problem areas were right on arteries, so they can't ablate those.
Oh my God.
And there was a million of those all on arteries, to the point where my entire inner and outer heart was just one big ball of scar tissue.
Oh, my God.
So he said, I don't know where we go from here, but you're basically done with ablations because I'm not going to do them anymore because they're not going to get you anywhere.
How many did you end up in total?
I think 7.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, and you received your new heart, what, 3.5 weeks ago?
Yeah. So what happened was,
yeah,
after I started having really, really the worst VTAC episodes ever, starting like May of this past summer.
And what would happen when you'd have one of those episodes?
Well, I'd go into an arrhythmia. My defibrillator would go off, and I'd get zapped multiple times.
Yeah.
And this was going on every day for months, multiple times a day. So, you know, that wasn't new because that's been going on for 15 years. But it got to September, where it really got dicey, where I was having these arrhythmias, and the defibrillator couldn't pick up the type of arrhythmia. So you'd be sitting there suffering, blacking out somewhere in a parking lot, and you couldn't do anything because you can't talk.
Right.
You're blacking out. The device can't bring you back. And that's at the point where you go into the red zone. So that made it very apparent that I needed one, but needing one and getting approved for one,
yeah,
and getting through their protocol is a whole nother challenge that is just mind-blowing.
So, I mean, obviously your doctor is saying this guy needs a heart.
Yeah.
But he has to go through protocol to figure out if you're going to be able to get one?
Yeah, because there's some of the criteria is wonky. Some of it makes perfect sense. Like, the obvious is they want you as healthy as they can going in, because if you get one, your recovery after and chance for success goes way up. Versus the guy who needs one, who's 150 pounds overweight.
Right.
He gets one, and he's so nuked, he can't. You're in such a weakened state, that's not the time to recover. So structurally, my body, I had kept it in order and beat myself to a pulp, keeping myself close in the event that I could get approved. But doing that was a double-edged sword, because it started to take nothing at all, just walking from here to there, for the device to start going off. So they determined that, you know, you're a good candidate because your chassis, if you will,
yes,
is tremendous. And if you get the heart, we think you would recover very, very fast.
What? And they want to make sure that they're success, right? At the end of the day, it doesn't look good if they're doing a heart transplant and people aren't making it through.
Correct. So that's another key factor, and there's several others, but it's very important to them that they've determined you need one, but they really want somebody that is pretty much a lock to come out of it swinging.
So then you go on, when you do go on a list, then it's still sort of a crapshoot in terms of finding a heart that's going to work for you.
Yes. Well, the tough part was at the hospital, my primary group, I got transferred up to Santa Clara, which is a fantastic facility, in that if you can, they run 125 different tests on you through blood work. Had to do 66 vials.
Oh, my God.
66 vials in about an hour. No kidding.
They take 66 vials of blood from you in an hour?
Straight.
Oh, my God.
Because I found out later there was kind of a window in their protocol, so they were just jumping through hoops to kind of squeeze me in because an opportunity was there. And they're like, today's going to be a mother for you, but grind through this for the next 4 hours. So they, 66 vials, checking for 125 things. If any one of those 125 had come up with anything whatsoever, you're out of the program.
Wow.
Because it compromises the success.
Sure, yeah.
Now there's, you could go walk down the street in front of a Walmart and grab 10 people, and 8 of them are going to have more than one thing on that list.
Right.
So I was kind of wigged out about that, but then again, not really, because I had felt good in general. And then there's all these other tests in other departments of the hospital, so they were literally rushing me around with no appointment, squeezing me in so they could check off all the boxes. And then by the time we were done with all that, 4 hours later, they said there was absolutely nothing on the list. So they said, you're good. Now it's showtime because you're going to get transferred to Stanford because that's who does all of the Bay Area heart transplants. And they are truly something else.
So at that point, did they know they had a heart that might work for you?
No. So once I got to Stanford in late September, I waited on the list for 7 weeks in Stanford until the call came where a guy comes walking into my room and they say it's the way it'll go. 50 people told me the way this is going to go down is right when you're most just bummed out about the whole process, a doctor will walk in and drop it on you, and you're not going to believe it. And that is exactly what happened.
Wow. And how long was the surgery?
Oh, four and a half.
Okay.
I laugh because I've said, I've done ablations that are twice that.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, four and a half, that's like... It's like doing a sprint distance triathlon. What's the big deal?
Yeah, the bonus was a really solid guy back east. Lives in not that far from Philly, who's a tri guy now, couldn't be more unathletic 6-7 years ago. Got the bug after the transplant. Did a 5K like 6-7 months in. Went slow, but did it. Got the bug. Did a half marathon. Got the bug. Said I'm doing a sprint. Got the bug and wanted to do a full half. And he did it. And he's just escalated things. He's a Ironman Foundation guy now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's really... helped fill me in on the timeline on how some of this stuff's going to work. But
so he reached out to you?
He did. I didn't know him at all.
That's cool.
He heard about the story.
Yeah.
And just said, I'm here for you. And he totally made a huge difference.
So after you have the surgery and you come out of that, I mean, did you notice an immediate improvement in terms of just, you know, your heart was actually working?
Big time. By the way, to rewind 10 seconds,
yeah.
This gentleman's name is Derek Fitzgerald.
Yeah, and he's part of the Ironman Foundation. I think I've met Derek before.
Yeah. He also did New York Marathon
a month ago. That's amazing. Now, how long has it been since he had the surgery?
6 years.
6 years.
6 years, and he says every year he only gets fitter.
See, that's like you're starting over. So, but
oh, completely, yeah.
So you, early on, I'm sure because of your fitness and because of your background, every day you felt like you were getting stronger and stronger.
Post-surgery?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I noticed after like a day or two, when you're really starting to come around,
yeah,
is that you're finally running on full voltage and that oxygen's really getting to your brain. Because I wasn't for a long time. Still operated at a decent level, but I just had that extra, like my short-term memory changed overnight.
Wow.
And I was able to just get locked in on things and just was sharper and engaged immediately. They said that might happen, but it really did.
That's so cool.
And that continues to get better over the first 6 months or so.
And it's been 3.5 weeks since you had this, but you had not a little bit. Anytime you're talking your heart, nothing's a little bit, but you had a setback this weekend.
Yeah, a little bit the last 2 or 3 days. I was cranking, but a couple little unexpected things that have been a little bit of challenge.
Yeah.
With just some complications, a little bit of an infection and other stuff, which just meant tests all day long. But we'll get to the bottom of it here soon.
How many vials did they take this time?
15 today.
15 vials of blood today?
15.
Oh, my. Now, when you do that, it's got to weaken you. 15 vials of blood coming out of your body?
Dude, I've done 165 so far.
165 vials of blood they take out of your body?
In the last 80 days.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How important has your background as an endurance guy and a motocross guy been? You know, the physical side, the mental side, because you've been at the low end of the barrel when you're doing an Ironman race or you're in a moto where you're just totally fried and you still get through it. How important has that type of background been in getting through this?
Huge. Even though it's been, seems like forever.
Yeah.
Since I was at a level where you could be, you know, competitive. That is for anybody at that level. It's hardwired in big time. That doesn't ever go anywhere. Now your VO2 changes, but that toughness has always been there, and it's probably what's gotten me through. Because there's been some, it's been a pretty difficult deal. I mean, I definitely signed up for enjoying the journey, regardless of the outcome. But to say that this process has changed me profoundly would be an understatement.
Now, Iron, how old are you now?
55.
You're still a young guy. Crap. And when you...
Imagine this starting when you're 29, though.
Yes. Yeah, I know. You've been dealing with this since you were 29. What are the doctors saying now? Obviously, all this stuff is still so new. You know, with the process in terms of you working out and getting back into a normal life, what are they saying?
I got really lucky, too, by the way, that the chief cardiologist at Stanford, who does these procedures but not as often because he's slammed with other stuff, I personally requested him because he was the guy who did Derek's surgery back east. Who had an amazing recovery, and those two knew each other. And he said, Derek said, by the way, my guy moved from University of Pittsburgh to Stanford.
What are the odds on that? That is amazing.
He goes, go look it up. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So I did. He was there. So I was sitting around the bed, wrote a handwritten letter, got it to him through just the local resident guy, cardiologist.
Yeah.
And then I didn't hear anything until I have the surgery. I wake up minutes later, and the guy that I requested introduced himself, and then I was just like, yeah, I was floored.
So you didn't know he was going to do your surgery?
I had no idea.
Oh, my God.
He's leaning over me going, glad to do it. You're going to recover well. I think that, well, another thing is I got a, my heart came from a 30-year-old.
Yes, I was wondering about that. Do you end up finding out where your heart came from and get connected with the family?
You're real limited.
Yeah.
Up front, they'll just tell you the age. You have to wait a year until they'll disclose more, if they even do it all.
Sure, because probably the family has to say they want to meet you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you had a 30-year-old heart.
30-year-old heart. Now, that 30-year-old heart, I'll tell you what, I'll be sleeping at night, and with my resting heart rate, it's elevated when you're going through all this.
Of course.
That thing beats like a jackhammer.
It's like 30 years old.
There's sometimes where I'm laying in bed, and like my left shoulder just bounces off the pillow, and it just keeps bouncing off, and I'm like, man, that thing's got some horsepower.
It's probably excited, right? It's like, oh, crap, I'm going to be gone. And like, oh, wait, I got another guy. This is awesome. I'm back in the game.
Well, I just hope that unit knows that it belongs to somebody that will honor it completely.
Yeah.
And never take a moment for granted.
No. Yeah. I'm sure your philosophy of life has changed significantly through all this.
Significantly. I mean, it's crazy. I know it would change me profoundly, but how could it not after what the last 6 months to a year has brought?
So, I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The obstacles have been just unbelievable. But, you know, I think, and it sounds corny, this has been just nonstop since the surgery, like 24/7 reflection, but also, it's a good word, celebration.
Yes.
Because they blend together, because you're so blessed, you're so fortunate, you have to be cognizant of it, which for me is easy.
Yeah.
But, you know, the daily reflection that I've had and being able to declutter my mind from the past with all those nightmares that are gone, along with the kind of unavoidable reprogramming you kind of need to put yourself through, is kind of the new norm.
The other side of this is going back to your days of you know, Cytomax and Muscle Milk and working with all these legends of endurance sports and motocross. Have folks reached out to you from those worlds to basically let you know that they're there? And this world, all of us in this base want you to get back healthy and happy again?
Bob, it's I can't even begin to express the level of heartfelt, just, I don't even know what words to use. The support has been literally overwhelming from every community. And it's what's really blown me away the most out of all that is that it's really crazy when I lead and have led, you know, a pretty, you know, I'm on the down low minding my own business. Don't say much. Just kind of head down. A lot of it over the years was because of this, but when I saw and am continuing to see how much more people cared than I realized,
yep,
like much more, it has kept me going and floored me. I've heard from people that I haven't talked to in 20 years that I didn't even know well, who have reached out saying, whatever you need, let me know. Here for you. You're one tough, you know what.
Yeah.
What I think it's just been Yeah.
What I was going to say, what you don't realize is those days when you were with a Cytomax, and again, these were the early days of triathlon, and our guys didn't make a lot of money. They didn't have much in the way of sponsorship. And when Iron called and said, hey, we want to sponsor you, either with product or dollars, and we believe in you.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys had never heard that before. People don't forget that. They don't forget the people who supported them when they didn't have support, people who believed in them when they didn't know if they believed in themselves. So, I think that's probably what you're hearing.
Yeah, I think there's something to that also, that we were of that generation, the first real legitimate company whose products were based on science.
No question.
That truly performed to the extent that I could feel good enough putting all my weight behind it, knowing what it would do for them, and that it finally provided an opportunity for guys to not have to lend their name to products that they didn't really use.
Right.
So when you get them really what they need and the stuff really works, you've got magic.
Well, Cytomax was there, and when I had Competitor Magazine, Cytomax was there from the very beginning, really, with a product that made sense. Right, product that was really geared for endurance athletes. And everybody else was just trying to take off-the-shelf stuff and go, oh, well, this endurance thing is getting bigger, we'll just toss them our same product. Where you guys were making products specific for our athletes. And, the reality is, you're not doing an Ironman race without the right stuff, right? You've got to be able to take in the right stuff. And that's what, Cytomax and Muscle Milk and the other products you were dealing with, that's what you guys did.
I still remember working with you to get some of that stuff off the ground and creating these little campaigns, which was easy because fast guys are always going to dig and dig and dig and want to know the truth. And anytime anybody did that back then with this stuff, they didn't have to do it too long because any hard workout, you knew that you were able to just do more work and then recover faster because of it. So I remember all that, the very beginnings of all that. And what was crazy is that right when this hard stuff happened in 91, I knew the days of trying to be fast were a memory. So that's how the position with them started. The CEO and owner of the company, who I was kind of working with on just a small sponsorship level months earlier, just called me one day and said, hey, get your ass up to the Bay Area. I want you to handle all the sports marketing. You can have a few products of your own. You get a budget. There's no handcuffs. I trust you. I believe you. People believe in you.
Yes, they do.
Let's see what we can do. And it was, it was a hell of a ride.
Yeah, it was so much fun because all those events, because the cool part is we were the same age as the athletes, right?
Yeah,
so we all hung out together and went to Ironman and went to the marathons and, any race you went to, if you're out at Cactus Cup out in freaking Arizona, there was Iron standing by a cactus making sure that athletes got what they needed. So it was a hell of a ride. And to be honest, I didn't know about all the hard stuff. I've got to ask you, give me an idea on what all of this is going to cost when it's done. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it's nasty.
Yeah, millions?
It's well into seven figures, but
wow.
So just the co-pays over the next year are going to be, I'll be looking under every sofa cushion, to say the least. I'll be selling a lot of Iron Treasures to do it.
So how can people help? How can people help?
Probably the best way would be if I could, when we're off, I can send you a link.
Perfect. I'll put that with our description of the interview. That'd be great.
Great.
That's awesome.
But any help Any help appreciated.
No, man. You know what? I always say this is a small sport with a big heart, and you sort of covered two of my favorites, the whole motocross world, and you know Bailey and Jeff Ward and all those guys, and then moving into, you know, triathlon, two really the most brutal sports out there. And there was a link when Bailey went off, and Bailey and those guys were training as triathletes for a while. Before Bailey was injured.
In 83 and 84, I trained with Bailey and O'Mara frequently.
Wow.
When they were, I got O'Mara his first road bike. It never
That's funny.
The first one.
Yeah.
We'd run. You know, he didn't have a bike. He wanted one. I got him one. Took him a few months to get up to speed, but he got up to speed fast. And then when Bailey could do stuff, he'd come over. It'd be the three of us.
Wow.
And that we'd beat each other up all day. And it was good times.
Love it. Hey, so Iron, I know that this has been a brutal weekend for you and a brutal day. I appreciate you taking time to chat. Definitely send me the link, and we'll get that with when we post the interview. But I'm just so glad you got yourself a 30-year-old heart. That's a good place to start.
Yeah, I've got one lucky guy. I got a gift, and I'm going to honor that gift.
Love it. Iron, thank you for everything you've done for our sport, and also we're just all praying for you and hope that hopefully we'll get this next summer. We'll get to see you. Maybe you'll be out at an event hanging out and supporting Derek, and maybe one day you'll be out there doing part of a relay with him or something like that.
Entirely possible, and I feel very confident saying that I'm hoping I'm about 10 feet away from you when you're taping Breakfast with Bob next October.
In Kona, that would be awesome. That would be great, Iron. I love it.
Thanks, Bob. I really enjoyed it, and I will, as soon as I'm off, I'll get you the link.
Core, we again are brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, toughmantri.com, VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, Polar, blood, sweat, and data. Premium Plus Sports, that's premiumplus-sports.com, USA-swimrun.com, grab a buddy, try out a swim run event, our Challenge Athletes Foundation. We have now raised over $100 million, sent out over 23,000 grants in our first 25 years to keep challenge athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews, babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives forever.